Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olivier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. Hello again, it's Divine Intervention, broadcasting over the internet with some podcast tastings of what we hope will again be really nice South African wine. We're on an estate which non-South Africans might have a little bit of trouble pronouncing, roughly. But before we go into their wines, let's go down to Cape Town, where we have the man who selects our wines and talks us through them, Michael Olivier. Hello again, Michael.
Hey, John. Nice to be with you.
Well, it's nice to be with you, even though we're over 1,000 kilometres apart. Jeremy Sampson.
Hello, Michael.
Oh, yes, he's one of our guests, Jeremy Sampson, as is Mike Schussler, well-known economist, as is Malcolm McDonald from Citadel.
Clientel.
All right. We must stop drinking this wine. So, Michael Olivier, we have a white and we have a red. Tell us about the white.
This is a farm called Jan Samerhout. It's owned by the Breslow family, who they're in the sort of Paardeberg area. And Janu, who is the maker of these wines, a couple of weeks ago got his Cape Wine Master's certificate. And his thesis was dry land wine farming, which is, of course, is quite appropriate because essentially that's what they do on Jan Samerhout. Jan Samerhout means loneliness, by the way. We're going to talk about the Vin Blanc 2015. I was very excited when we got this wine simply because it's a blend of Chenin Blanc, one of my favorite grapes, and then Claret Blanche, which we seem to have forgotten about, Semillon, which of course adds a little bit of body and mouth feel, and then Viognier, which gives it the lovely sort of floral characteristics as well. The thing that I like most about this wine is the price. It's 65 Rand a bottle, which I think delivers great value. It's fresh, it's fruity. I think it's really, really well put together. You've got the sort of the base of the Chenin with those wonderful sort of appley, tropical, fruity flavors, through to the claret, which gives a nice crisp freshness. Semillon, of course, a little bit of gravitas to the bottle, and then the Viognier, which just always seems to add a little sort of floral, apricotty, peachy kind of flavor to it. This is a great glass on its own, and I think fantastic with food.
Well, I do appreciate, what I really do appreciate about this wine is it's interesting, it's a little bit different, it's not a run-of-the-mill wine, it's well-made, it's pleasant. I think I'd probably enjoy it more with food. I don't think this is one I'd want to sip on its own for too long, particularly if it means loneliness or whatever you said, Michael. But what do I know? Malcolm McDonald.
I think it's lovely and fresh, and the fruitiness of it is enjoyable. It's a nice drinking wine. I agree, you could have it with food, but I think I could have it by itself as well. Nothing wrong with that glass of wine. Very, very tasty.
Okay. Well, what does Jeremy Sampson think?
John, I think it's interesting because I had the pleasure of actually talking to the gentleman who produces this wine a few weeks ago. And I think he's only been producing wine under this label for a couple of years, even though the farm goes back a long way. And I think, though, what it makes the point is that I think we've been getting used to red blends over the last few years, but I'm not sure we've got used to white blends yet. And I'd like to hear other views on that. But I find it very interesting. I find it very fresh. I think it needs a little bit of getting used to. But having said that, I'm enjoying it.
Mike says that.
I agree with Jeremy that it's interesting. Takes a bit of getting used to. I'm not quite 100% behind this wine. I'd say this is a sort of 7 out of 10 for me. It is good. I'll have it again. But I sort of prefer South African Chenin Blanc. I prefer Sauvignon Blanc on its own. I'm not sure if I like too much of a white blend, but that might be because I'm a bit more conservative on my whites and I'm more adventurous on my reds. So that might be an internal mistake rather than this wine. This wine is certainly at least, it's got to be tasted again.
Okay, well, Michael Olivier, we had a blend of views on this blend of grapes. Any response to that? Are some of us being maybe a bit too cautious and conservative?
No, look, I think we've got to be adventurous. We've got to get used to white blends because I think they'll become more and more prevalent, particularly with these. With these lovely young winemakers like Janu at Yensanet, who have travelled, who have experience of wines overseas, harvesting overseas, and I think we're going to get more and more of this kind of blend happening.
Okay, well, let's move swiftly on to the red then. Same producer, different colour. Tell us about it.
Yeah, look, this is the Cuvée 2014. It's a Shiraz-led blend. What I quite like about it, it's just so layered. There's wonderful fruit there, there's spice there, there's sort of plums and brambles and wonderful berries. It's got it's quite a bold wine. It has a sort of frisky acidity, nice soft tannins, and again, a great value at R65 a bottle. And it's the sort of wine that you could actually buy now and put down for a couple of years, and it'll just give you more and more pleasure as you go along.
Well, Michael, I'm not hating it. I think it's a wine that I would quite enjoy drinking, but for me, it's maybe a little bit too fruity and not quite dense and heavy enough for a red wine to my palate. So I don't think I agree with you on everything you said, but then I will have to defer to your superior wisdom because you know what you're talking about, and I don't. Let's see what Martin McDonald has to say.
I think it delivers just too big of a punch. It's kind of a knockout blow. Maybe with like a nice oxtail or a rich stew or something like that, it'd be lovely. But as a wine on its own, I think it's just a little bit much.
Jeremy.
Well, John, to use one of your phrases, what do I know? Because it's, as Malcolm says, it knocks you out, it's strong and powerful, but it's only 13.5%. I thought it would be about 14.5%. But like we often say on this programme, I would like to lay down a case and perhaps one bottle a month or one bottle a year. I think this is an estate and a label to watch because I think the wines over the next few years are going to be actually something that people are going to talk about more and more, despite the fact that I can't pronounce the name.
I'm sure you can. Yeah,
Yensanmate, as Michael says, it means loneliness. This bottle of red, let me tell you, I agree with Malcolm in the sense of you need to have it with a stew. It is strong enough to be served with a curry, with an oxtail, with that type of stuff. It is sort of a winter wine, if for lack of a better word. And in the winter, when you have a stew or you're sitting down in a restaurant and you've ordered a meal such as an oxtail and dinner flace, that thing that they serve in the Cape with a lamb and stuff, and waterblommekie briedi maybe, but that's a bit mild. But dinner flace and a lamb curry and an oxtail, this is where the punch of this wine would really come out. And quite frankly, at R65 a bottle, as the economist, hey, that is a deal.
Okay, well, congratulations, Mike. It's nice to know that your economic analysis is occasionally spot on. Michael Olivier, just going back to something we were chatting about recently, and it's something that I feel quite strongly about. It's bringing your own wine to a restaurant and paying a bit of corkage. I had some visitors from Belgium recently, and they had visited a Belgian winemaker in the Cape and brought back one of the bottles that has to be my wine of the year. If only I could remember what it was called. Anybody can go onto my Facebook page and see me grinning inanely at this this particular wine. It was wonderful. And I'm not sure what corkage we paid, but it was certainly worth it because that was an absolutely stunning bottle of wine. I brought along a bottle of my own choosing, which I have to say was vastly inferior and made me feel a bit embarrassed, only because it was good rather than brilliant. But it is a good idea, isn't it? If you've got a nice bottle of wine, you want someone else to do all the work with the cooking, why not go out and take a bottle or two to a restaurant? I think if you're drinking a very good bottle of wine, you're not paying over the odds, given the markup that you would have to pay on one of the restaurant's own good bottles of wine. Your thoughts?
Yeah, look, my thoughts have changed over the years when we ran our Cape Town restaurant. In the beginning, I thought, you know, my list is, there's an ample choice there. You don't have to bring your own wine. And then by the time we actually opened the restaurant, I'd come around to, okay, if you want to bring your own wine, bring your own wine. And then when it got to the stage where the rich old ladies from Constantia were bringing serious plonk and asking me to put it into a decanter, I thought, no, I'm actually going to start charging corkage. Now if I have a bottle of good wine, I want to take it to a restaurant, I'm quite happy to pay corkage because the corkage would probably be less than the markup they would put on the wine anyway. So I'm now one of those who's in favour of taking your own wine and paying the corkage.
Actually, Michael, I don't know if you remember, but I think the last time we had dinner together was at the Food Barn down in the Cape.
Yes.
And I had been meandering around and bought a few bottles and thought I was doing a really good deal by taking them along. In fact, that particular restaurant, the food wasn't cheap, but I thought the wine was remarkably good value for a South African restaurant. Tiny markups. And I probably ended up cheating myself by trying to be mean. So it doesn't always work. Obviously, if you know the restaurateur, occasionally they may even wave the corkage if you wave a glass in their direction. Jeremy Sampson.
Well, you're talking Food Barn. I know Michael is very, very fond of a certain Frank Dangereux,
who's the chef at the Food Barn.
Who's the chef and runs it. But, you know, as you say, this is where if you have some knowledge of wine and you have some understanding of the price points, the minute you look at a wine list, sometimes you can actually almost check out the integrity of that particular restaurant, especially if it's one you don't know. But you have to be vigilant. As I say, you know, when I was mentioning earlier, come back to the London example. You go in and have a Spearnkop at £70 a bottle, and you don't know any better. And then perhaps you come on holiday to South Africa, hopefully at Christmas time, and you check it out, and then you see the real price, and that upsets you, I'm sure. Mm. And the integrity of that particular restaurant in London goes through the tubes.
Mike Schuster, I hate to put you on the spot with an economic type question, but your own views on wine markets.
Well, look, I mean, a restaurant has to make money. I had a restaurant, I lost money. I think what you need to do is you need to have a reasonable markup. Now, there's some restaurants in Joburg that will charge you 30 Rand corkage, which I've got no problem with. Others that charge you 60 Rand, I have no problem. Really, I think it's fair, and there's no doubt in my mind. I do have a problem, however, if you're a Muslim restaurant, and you have, and this is not against Muslim, I've been to good Ethiopian restaurants that serve you wine and some, but then they charge you for a huge amount for bringing alcohol into the place. That is a problem. Mm-hmm. I want to say just something else. I think the markup of wine, if it's three times the price, it's still a bargain of the retail price. But when it gets to like four or five times, then I'm starting to worry a bit, because then you're selling me alcohol and you're not selling me the service of the food and the stuff that you're making, and you're relying too much on the alcohol. So I think there's a sort of middle road where you can charge between three and four times, but hopefully closer to three. And when you're selling me a wine and it's a shitty wine and you got such a markup on it, then I get very, very worried and I don't come back. And I think those restaurants generally don't make it. I've been to a restaurant recently where a Bayer's Clue of Pinotage is 125, which I think is very reasonable for a restaurant. And I've been to restaurants where they've tried to sell me the cheapest wine on the market for ridiculous prices. And then sometimes you get away with a very, very reasonable corkage. I think there's too many restaurants that don't know what they're doing. There are people who are getting paid out because they've lost their jobs and they just start a restaurant or they buy into a franchise. They've got no clue as to what they're doing.
Well, that's
I had any clue.
All that is valuable input. And I think, Mike, one message that seems to come out from what you're saying, if they're trying to rip you off, don't go back.
Exactly.
Or drink a beer or drink a tap water and serve the buggers right. Mm. Michael McDonald.
Yeah, I had a mate come out from England or from Ireland a little while back, and it was, you know, our one opportunity to go out for dinner. We had a whole group of friends, and I thought, well, I'm going to take a couple of really nice bottles of wine. We went to Sandton Square, an Italian restaurant there on the square, sat down. They didn't offer corkage. No, you can't bring your own bottles of wine in here. And we got up and went to a different restaurant. And I think, you know, for the group of people that were there, we were going to spend whatever we fancied. There wasn't really a budget for that evening. We were going to eat whatever we wanted and enjoy the evening. So I think it's silly not to give your customers that option. Yeah. Even if the price, you know, is bordering on high for the corkage, I think that option is something I want.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. Michael Oliphir, a final thought on all this.
Well, I was amused, Jeremy, saying that he paid there was a Spiel & Kopp Riesling on a wine list in England for £70. If they'd bought it here, they would have paid £7 for it. So that's quite a markup.
And, of course, you've got to pay the plane fare as well, so it does get very expensive dining out in there. Anyway, that's enough tasting for now. Many thanks to our expert in the Cape, who selects our wines for us and, of course, offers great insight into the world of wine and food and all good things in life. Michael Oliphir, lovely to chat to you again.
John, thank you so much.
And many thanks to our studio tasters, to Malcolm McDonald, to Jeremy Sampson, and last, certainly not least, Mike Schisler. I'm John Fraser. That was Divine Intervention.